Hello and welcome to the Parent Survival Kit Podcast from Surviving to Thriving in Your Household. My name is Gene Schwalen. Next to me, as always, my beautiful bride, Dr. Sonia Schwalen, pediatric psychologist expert and nationally certified school psychologist. We have returning once again, we have Jeff Cummins, top flight wealth strategies, wealth strategist, financial planner, great personal friend of ours. He also handles our finances. And so we want to do another episode. There's so much that we want to talk about when it comes to finance. We know that this is a big question on the minds of everyone. I mean, it takes money to do anything these days, right? So I want you to kind of today just touch base on the fundamentals of finance, really what that means. We kind of got some more details on the previous episode, but fundamentals of finance, and then we can really even talk to how do we actually be role models for our kids in more depth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but specifically, yeah, with kids, what are some of the fundamentals? You know, I think obviously starting with having them learn how to earn money, you know, is a big one. They ought to have responsibilities, obviously, around the house. But if there's bigger things that we want to start, paying them for, they obviously start to learn that, okay, I work on something that maybe I don't necessarily want to do. I'd rather go play baseball or this or that. But teaching them, you know, you work and then you get paid. And then when they have that dollar, of course, then it becomes, okay,
what do we do with it?
What do we do with that? And, of course, they want to spend it. You know, right away. But in the other podcast, you had mentioned that sometimes if you ask them, well, you can spend it right now on this, or what if you save it for a few more months? And then even if we start to get a little bit of interest on it, what else would you like to buy that's maybe bigger than that?
So I think what may be actually good is because I know a lot of us, even as adults, struggle with what are the true fundamentals of finance and money. We don't really, I mean, a lot of our parents don't teach us these things. I know my parents, my dad was really frugal and really focused on retirement. And we learned that the hard way. He never spoke to us. We just kind of saw some of the effects of his goals, and sometimes they were nice and sometimes they weren't so nice, and how we were, you know, how we grew up and whatnot. But, a lot of us, you know, they don't teach finance in high school. What is the fundamentals of finance? What's the fundamentals of money? Yeah. You need money to go buy something, but truly, what does that mean? So let's talk about it on a kind of an upper, like, adult level. Mm-hmm. And then see how we can dive into it.
Sure. Yeah, I think if you boil it down, our church likes to say give, save, live. You know, that's what it really comes down to. And, you know, if you prioritize it in that fashion, life's going to work out, you know, God willing, pretty well for you. And that's the way it's supposed to be, right? Give and then save and then live. And we talked earlier that, you know, if you can figure out for yourself if tithing is important to you, and if so, what's that look like? But we'll just use the 10% number. You know, if you're tithing 10%, you teach them how every time you get a dollar, let's take a dime and we'll put it over here. And also, let's take a quarter and we're going to put it in this jar. And the rest of it, you can do whatever you want, you know, and enjoy life. Can you imagine if you started your first time you got your first job and you started doing that, that the habits that you create, the intangible benefits too of that, of just always kind of knowing. And we talked about compounding a little bit too, off air, I think. But starting the compounding magic when you're 22 years old, or even when you're 10 years old, I mean, it's the numbers just get bananas.
Astronomical.
They get astronomical. It's really crazy. But a lot of it, we're going to become a product of our parents, good, bad, and ugly. And yeah. A lot of people, you know, we have a career because the parents are not that great at it. And so it's, you know, they're just going to see, and it's going to continue to trickle downhill just like everything else, you know, can.
Yeah. And I want to hit home on that really quick too, because one thing we teach on the Parents Survival Kit podcast a lot is, you know, kids are learning. It's caught, not taught. So we can tell our kids all day long, but they're actually seeing what we're doing more. And that's really how they develop their character, their morals and their values. And it kind of reminds me of us going to like the grocery store sometimes and whatnot. And, kids wanting things, and like, do we buy it for them? Do we not buy it for them? Is it really that big of a deal? You know, it's 50 cents or it's a dollar. And, you know, I'm guilty of this a lot with my kids, especially my 8-year-old or 9-year-old. She's always pushing that envelope and, you know, hey, Dad, can I buy this and whatnot? So luckily she's been earning money and saving money. So now I'll turn to her, well, you've got some money. Do you want to spend it and whatnot?
Can you? Yeah, that was a great answer.
You know, but even with our toddlers, if they get into the habit of anytime they want to go to 7-Eleven for an icy or candy, or anytime at the grocery store, they want to buy something, like, I wanted this truck, this little thing they have in the end caps. Mm-hmm. If we're buying it for them every time, I think we are showing them that, hey, anytime you go anywhere, you can buy whatever you want if you want it, you know, and that may not be the best message, even if it's harmless at 2 and 3 years old, they're catching that, they understand that, and they'll ask for that their entire life.
Yeah, great point. No is okay, you know, teaching them that they're not going to get it every time, and also just to chip in something. We do that, especially if it's something bigger, and they've been good, they're getting good grades and things, and which, by the way, we just last year have started coming up with a pay for grades thing. You know, I'm a fan of that. I feel like it kind of goes back to that, you know, you work and how well are you doing your job? You know, it's going to have a correlation to your income. Yeah. And I'm a fan of that. But sometimes we'll chip something in. But just it's funny because we'll ask, you know, well, do you want to buy it? They'll ask for it. And I'll say, well, you know, why don't you buy that? All of a sudden, they're not that interested in that anymore, you know, a lot of times.
Well, that's funny. You said that no is definitely a great answer we can have a lot of times. And it reminds me of a Warren Buffett quote. He said, the difference between successful people and very successful people is that very successful people say no to almost everything, including that little piece of candy or a truck in the grocery store for our kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's notorious for being super, super frugal. You know, he goes to McDonald's and he orders the same thing and he spends like $2.69 or something every time.
That's the same
incredible
way.
Incredible, that guy. I mean, he could buy, you know, countless McDonald's, but yeah, it's kind of, but it's the habits that he's just done for a long, long time. And he's obviously a genius too. That didn't hurt. But yeah, the rest of us, that's the thing that I think we overcomplicate all this stuff. If you can just, and it's difficult because back to the Joneses and we want satisfaction now. But yeah. If we can, you know, this isn't that a lot of the fundamentals of what we do isn't rocket science, but they're not being done, you know, and the proof's in the pudding. And so we have to kind of go back to square one and talk about the why and stuff. And, but it's, you know, we all know we need to be saving more, but it's no fun.
So you mentioned, the fundamentals, and getting started early. And if we did that, what would that look like? I mean, I couldn't even imagine what life would look like today if I did that from a very young age. With all that I've done, you know, in my life, it's just, you know, you can't dwell on that. You got to say, where am I at now?
That's exactly right.
And figure out how to move forward. It's discipline, right? So, you know, very successful athletes know how to discipline themselves in ways to become the high, you know, performing, achieving, best of the best athletes, disciplined with their workout regimens, with their sleep patterns, you know, with their meals, with all the things they do to be that elite athlete.
Mm-hmm. You don't
there's
see that.
A true discipline. And the question is, we can be that true athlete in the financial world, regardless of how much money we do or do not make, based on our discipline habits. You know, wherever, it doesn't matter what money we make compared to somebody else, if we do the same thing, the same percentages, we're going to end up in the same place ultimately in some regard.
You got to be willing to do the things nobody else want to do, right? And it's all the pride. They talk about that with Michael Jordan. I mean, he was first on the court and last to leave, and the things you don't see, but you know, it's not as fun, but you know, there's not an easy road. You got to be willing to do the things that a lot of people aren't willing to do.
So give us some other financial,
back to the basics.
Back to the basics.
That's what we like to call it.
Yeah, with, you know, we talked about couples and parents and stuff, and a lot of it I think is just communication. It's sitting down and really kind of, I think it's important to dream. It's important to sit back and say, what do we want? Where do we want our life to be in 10 years and in 20 and in the end and, you know, everything in between? And just kind of talk that out. And if you can do that, then you're halfway there, because then it gets you something that you can be excited about and get fired up about and be on the same page. And, you know, it helps you to see the bigger picture. If we can't see the bigger picture, then I don't, you know, I want to go back to, you know, spending everything that I've got. I don't want to save. So a lot of it's just, I think, dream that up and figure out back to your why, you know, what is that? And with couples, a lot of times, you know, there are certain things I spend money on that I probably could spend less and vice versa. And so, you know, be willing to kind of say, okay, well, I'll step in first. And, you know, here, I think I can do a little bit less of this or a little bit less of that. And each person be willing to give, you know, a little bit on things that are their spending weaknesses. And then write out to the side of, you know, of the page, here's what we spend every month on that, and here's what I think that can free up. And it doesn't take a lot to find significant money. I tell people, remove the filter. You know, it's too easy to justify all of it. Well, you know, we've got the gym, but I need to be healthy. And Whole Foods isn't, you know, really, it's healthier. you know, just remove the filter just for this exercise to just say, if it was life or death, look at every one of them and say, what could I do? Is it conceivable? Could I technically sell one of our cars? Yes, we could. You know, if COVID taught a lot of people that stuff, by the way, mm-hmm. you know, where what didn't used to be negotiable, they didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden it's like, oh man, we just lost.
Even down to how many, you know, squares of tissue paper you use at a time. I mean,
right. I mean, we got, yeah, extreme. And so that's the record amount of savings that we've had because they were forced to, you know, a lot of times, but remove the filter and, you know, without it being too difficult, I tell people doesn't have to be a crash diet. Doesn't have to be, we're never going to go out to eat again. No, but do we need to eat out at the types of places that we're eating out and the frequency we're eating out? Probably not. So let's just cut that back some. Let's make an adjustment here, make an adjustment there. And that, when you make little adjustments in four or five areas, you're not going to feel it, you know, that much. And so it's easier to do that and stick to it and then get excited about it. And when they come back to me and say, you know what, this is kind of cool. We didn't realize it, but we found, you know, $750 a month on just stuff without even really trying. Okay, great. Let's start there. Let's build the best comprehensive plan that we can for $750 a month. And then let's talk in 3 months, see how it feels. Let's talk in 6 months and continue to add fuel, you know, yep. to the tank.
You know, I teach time management skills to our entire team. And, you know, one thing that I teach them is that you have to really figure out all the things you're doing in the day because, you know, time is our most valuable asset. And so if we all had an extra hour a day, what would that look like? And so we can all find that extra hour a day. We can all find the time to do different things. You know, we always go back and forth, there's Swain and I, about, you know, well, we eat out or we do this or we do that because we just don't have enough time. But, you know, is there time? You can find time, but it comes down to the same thing with finances. And you mentioned, like, you know, can we find some extra money here or there? What are we spending money on, the gym or Whole Foods versus, you know, regular non-organic, you know, types of things? One thing I used to make all my credit clients do back in the day is, especially those struggling with their finances, they would get a composition notepad, mm-hmm. and I would make them every day for 3 months write down every single penny they spent, whether it was with a credit card, mm-hmm. cash, whether it was the Coke machine for 75 cents, whatever it may have been back then. Mm-hmm. And then we would categorize all those expenses, and they would be blown away. Mm-hmm. How much money they spend even on the Coke machines daily or the Starbucks every day, or
always eye opening.
You know, you just never realize it till you see it, especially these days because we're not spending cash very often. I don't really ever carry cash or much cash. I'm always swapping my card. Mine's because I want the rewards for it, but you still get in that habit of swapping your card and you don't really know what you're spending or what you're buying. And at the end of the month, it's just, well, I got to pay this off now. Yeah. Where'd it go?
Doing an inventory is super key. You know, most people don't know what they spend. And if they give me a number, they're probably off by 50%. You know, it's pretty crazy. And so just nowadays, it's a lot easier, to your point, to go pull your, you know, your credit card statement for the last few months. And a lot of them will even categorize that for you. We've got a system that does it as well. But yeah, just going through that exercise and being real with yourself. Do I pull out cash? Okay, where do I spend that cash? But for the most part, it's all credit card. It's Amazon, it's whatever. So it's not that difficult to do that. But they've never really looked at it. It just gets paid. You know, it gets paid automatically every month. And so if they can take the time to sit down and really look at that, usually that's when they come back after me, you know, giving them that homework and we talk through it and I say, how did it go? I can't believe we were spending this much on cell phone bills and this much on, you know, channels we don't watch and this much on the gym and this much eating out.
All these different apps that we just don't even know what they are for. Right. $5 here, $3 there, $10 right. here. You know, you mentioned something offline about having fun. Like one of the fundamentals of finance is having fun, you know, and you talked about just a moment ago, you know, you give, you save, and you live. And living is when you have that money left over, you can do whatever you want with it. And having fun can be fun in different ways. And so just talking about just, you know, creating that budget, figuring out what we're spending money on, we want to back off in these areas. And creating, you know, a monthly budget. How much will we spend on groceries? How much will we spend on going out to eat? How much will we spend in entertainment? All these different categories that we all spend money in, but most of the time we don't really know how much money we're spending in. If we create that budget and we actually look at that on a weekly basis, we may find out that, hey man, it's the end of the month. It is the end of the month on this show right now, right? And this Friday is pizza night, but man, we don't have any more money in that budget area for going out to eat or going to the movies. Let's have fun. Let's be creative. Let's figure out something else we can do that doesn't cost money. So you can have fun budgeting, saving, and game planning too. I know a lot of families who are successful in this area, they'll talk about vacations. We want to go on vacation too. Mm-hmm. Let's dream big. Okay, we can dream big. So we want to go to, you know, to Europe. Well, man, we can't afford to go to Europe. Sure you can. If we all back off just a little bit, you know, and do this, and we save each week and put this money into this pot right here every single week, we can get there. We can do the same thing with our financial goals if we have the same mindset, but we have to have that goal, and it has to actually be something that's very meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah. Knowing the destination, like we talked about last time, you know, is super key. If we want to go to Florida, but, you know, do we want to go to Destin or do we want to go to Naples? You know, it's a big difference. One of them, you know, maybe we've got enough gas in the tank to get to Destin, but maybe, you know, we really want to go to Naples. If we know the specific street address and everything we want to go to, then it's real simple to say, oh, it's here, 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 here. Here's miles per gallon for the car. Here's what it's going to take this long and this much money. But until we know that destination and can get excited about that destination, to your point, then we're just hoping we're going to just drive east and hopefully we get there. And you're going to, you know, you may still get there, but at best, it's going to take you a lot longer.
Yeah. And I think some of these things are really, really just great to role model for our kids. We spoke about this a little bit on a previous podcast, but being that role model, having these goals and plans, including our kids, incorporating our kids into our plans, if they understand where our budgets are at to some degree, you know, even if it's surface level and we utilize that, you know, hey, can we stop and get some ice cream today or whatnot? Well, you know, we don't have that in our budget today. We did this, you know, 2 weeks ago or last week or whatever else. Or we're actually, remember, we're going to go to the state fair next weekend. So, you know, so yeah, ice cream sounds great, but wouldn't you rather go to the state fair next weekend? You know, having those things allows us to actually role model for our kids what finance really looks like, how to be a little bit more conservative, how to save, how to be saving focused. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's really, really key. And you mentioned something earlier about giving, and, you know, I really want to kind of hit home on this a little bit. So maybe you have some great information for us, but I think teaching our kids how to give is so key and crucial at a very young age, because the more they know that at a younger age, then money itself doesn't really mean so much in a sense to where, I mean, yeah, we all need it. You know, it's requirement. But when we're willing to give first, man, we kind of die to self in all kinds of ways. And so the Joneses life that you mentioned and keeping up with the Joneses, and I got a Jones for this, you know, new car. You know, we see these things that come out, or the new iPhone is out. I got to go get the new iPhone, but my phone's only 6 months old. You know, do you really need that new iPhone? If we teach ourselves and our kids to give first, I think that kind of helps fix a lot of the problems. Yeah. What do you think?
With no expectations of return.
Right? Exactly.
And just realizing it's all God provided and learning that. You mentioned the Joneses. I mean, I don't know, but I got to imagine a lot of them are maybe not given that much, you know, or saving that much. I can tell you for fact, you know, history, they're not saving that much. They look like they have a lot more money than they do.
So $30,000 a year millionaires we see all the time, right?
That's exactly
that's
right.
That's what I call them. Yeah.
You know, one thing that I did with my 18-year-old early on is I told him a long time. He's always been like a car kind of fanatic, kind of like me. He loves cars. And my dad has all kinds of classic cars. He's got a 74 Firebird that's mint condition. He bought brand new as a kid, or not as a kid, but, you know, a couple years before I was born. A few years before I was born, not that old, but he still has it to this day. So we've always been a car family. But so what I told our son was, hey, when you turn 16, you get your license, you know, we'll help you buy a car. But what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to actually match whatever you save. So for several years, he knew that every dollar he saved, he was going to be matched. It's kind of like that 401k. So I'm not going to match it either, because if you pull it out early, there's penalties and all that stuff. So you're not going to get the matching if you pull it out early. So you don't get matched until it comes time to actually buy the car. So on the day you go buy your car, whatever money you have, I'll match it. So if you've got 4K, we're going to go buy an $8,000 car. And it was really just cool watching him, because then he did, you know, figure out as he got a little bit older, yeah, I don't really want to spend this money, or I'm willing to do extra work. So he would do extra yard work. He'd do things around the house that, you know, that wasn't just normal chores. I mean, we've done so much landscaping stuff. I mean, unbelievable. Yeah. And it was good for me, because it actually saved me more money and his labor costs. But you know, it's really cool seeing kids learn that value of a dollar and putting that hard work behind it as well.
I love that that concept for college, actually. I thought about that years ago. I just thought, you know, for that parent that says that I'm gonna pay for my kids to go to college, then why not incentivize them by saying, for every dollar of scholarship you find a way to go get, I will write you a check for 50 cents or 25 cents or whatever. I mean, that's
awesome.
You know, that to me is, we can't do it for them. My wife put herself through school with, I think, 5 or 6 different scholarships, and she worked hard. She wrote papers and went to networking events and all kinds of stuff. But if you can go to them and give them that and say, I mean, you may be prepared for it, of course, to write the check. But I think that's a perfect win-win if you're somebody that was going to pay for that either way. And right. It just teaches them, you know, amazing life lessons. And of course, to some degree, I'm going to control where they spend this $15,000, you know, or something that we may end up having to give them.
Yeah.
Spend it or save it wisely or give some and all that. But to me, that makes a lot of sense.
So a couple of questions. I know we don't have much time left today, but a couple of quick questions. Number one, how old does my kid have to be before I can actually set up some type of retirement or Roth or, you know, something like that for them?
Roths are IRAs, which means that you have to have earned income.
Okay.
So we can't just put money into a Roth IRA unless they have earned income. They're mowing yards or for whatever, you know, whatever reason.
That you have to claim.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. So you can put up to 100%, up to 6,000 into your Roth IRA. It's a great tool, can be used for a lot of things. But yeah, unfortunately, we get that question all the time. They've got to have earned income. Now, some clients of ours that own businesses will just make them a brochure model and pay them $6,000 a year to do it. And it just goes that way, and it goes right into their IRA, and then they teach them how to invest it, and they teach them about the tax buckets and some of that. A lot of times we'll do that. You know, we may have them come in one day, and we'll talk to them about that. So there's creative ways to give them that earned income, but they've got to have that. But that being said, it's a great tool. If it's not available, it's not available. We can still set up the third bucket. You know, we really didn't talk a whole lot about it last time, but non-qualified investments that are just, they're not real tax, they don't grow tax-free like that bucket or tax-deferred like the 401k, but the liquid money, you know, you can put...
It's better than not saving at all.
...enough earned income, no contribution limits. That you'll pay taxes on the dividends and interest and gains, but still is going to teach them those lessons that we want to teach them.
Okay, so we want to set up a 529 college fund for our kids. Some things that we asked you that I think parents, you know, probably ask a lot and parents may want to know is, you know, number one, what is the cost of college going to be at a certain time? So you actually can kind of work those numbers to some degree based on history. So that's where your expertise comes in. And then determining how much of that we want to actually invest. And the big question is if our kid ends up not going to school for whatever reason or goes to school outside the country, you can't use that 529. So you can talk about all that. But if they don't go to school, what happens? You know, what are 529s? What are the things we need to think about, things we should, you know, ask questions about?
Yep. 529 is just a tax code like 401k. Think of it as a Roth IRA for education. The rules changed years ago to where it used to have to be higher education. Now it can even be private grade school. But basically it fits in bucket two, the tax-free bucket. And you put after-tax dollars in, and it grows tax-free as long as you withdraw that money for qualified education expenses, which is books, tuition fees, room and board, supplies, in-state, out-of-state, public, private, truck driver school, culinary school, beauty school, anything, you know, it's very broad definition now. But the benefit to those is tax-free growth. We do customize when we run those numbers. We try to figure out, you know, what kind of school is the target and how much percent do we want to, you know, does the family want to save? Do they want to pay for 50% or 100%? What's the inflation rate on that? It's way higher than just the average cost of inflation. It's more than 2 or 3%, right closer to 4 or 5. And then what expected return, given their time frame, might we expect? Well, if we got a 15-year-old, that's going to be a lot lower number because we're going to be a lot more conservative by design because the time frame is shorter than sure. A newborn where we've got 18 years. So we run all those numbers, and it's a moving target, you know, of course, but we don't want to overfund the 529s. We like to 75% fund. If somebody wants to say, Texas Public School, let's use UT or A&M or whatever, and we had a system that pulls the real-time numbers, and then we do the math, we might shoot to 75% fund that goal through the 529 to reduce the chances that we've got too much money, you know, in there. Because to your question, you know, what's at stake for taxes and penalty is the growth. If we put in 50 grand over the years and it's grown to 80 or whatever, we've got 30,000 of growth and they get a full write. Well, then the IRS basically makes us take it out of bucket two and put it in bucket three. We're going to pay taxes at ordinary income tax rates on the growth. Not the end of the world. You know, it got to grow without taxes for 18 years, potentially. But if it turns out that we don't need it for anything, which, by the way, you could use it yourself. Go get your MBA or nieces and nephews. Anybody in your bloodline can use it tax-free. But worst case, if you're going to take it back out, just put it back in your checking account, pay taxes at ordinary income on the growth and a 10% penalty on the growth. So it might cost you, you know, 40% of the growth. Still not the end of the world. It doesn't feel good at that point, but that's, you know.
Okay.
That's the question.
Can we set a 529 up ourselves?
You mean to have you as the beneficiary?
No, do I need a wealth strategist to actually go through?
Absolutely. And do that? Yeah, you could do it just like with anything. You can. There's always, you know, you can always do this stuff yourself. And sometimes that's the right answer. If you spend the time, you know, researching managers and styles and know what to do and when and what allocation and how much to have in large cap growth and all that stuff, you absolutely can do that.
Okay.
It's an option. You know, the screwy thing with 529s is mutual fund companies have to affiliate with different states. It's an odd deal, but basically I get the question, well, is Illinois better than Virginia? You know, and sometimes I got to look up who is Illinois, you know, and maybe it's four or five different fund families that. So I got to kind of dig and figure out, the state really has nothing to do with it unless you live in a state that has a state income tax. Then you get a deduction on your state income taxes for those contributions. So you might want to use that particular fund family that coordinates with your state. But other than that, Texas, we don't have state income tax. We want to then just use the best manager that we can. We don't care what state they're with, but looking at their fees and returns and history and managers and stuff like that.
Okay, and then another question I have really quick, even when it comes to even 529s and savings accounts and investments for our kids, you know, birthday parties, families always buying a bunch of gifts kids don't need. I mean, we've got toys that are still in their brand new boxes from a year and a half ago, literally. Mm-hmm. You know, Christmas time, you know, it's all the same, right? They get too many toys, they don't need as many toys. So we'd rather them give them, you know, a portion of that or as much or all of it as they want to or can. You know, to actually fund their college fund and whatnot. So
that's common.
Can family members actually just fund it themselves without even going through us?
Yep. We just give them the details on the, you know, where to send the check and who to make it out to. And yeah, it's very common.
Very cool. So we talked about in the last episode that we did, as far as, you know, people don't really miss the money they don't see. So one thing I'm thinking about when it comes to college funds, in fact, I had this conversation just the other day, with a close friend and he's got two kids. One is actually now as a kindergartner. So his daycare costs have gone down substantially, almost $1,000 a month.
Yeah, I believe it.
And his other daughter, she's still a couple of years away and whatnot. But you know, what I told him was one thing he didn't have a college fund set up obviously during preschool. I'm like, but he was always concerned about it. I'm like, they're so young, it doesn't matter. I mean, so even when they get to grade school, 5-6 years old, you still have 12 years. I mean, that's a long time. So don't stress it. In fact, if you think about it, if you take the money that you're spending in preschool right now or daycare, you already are spending it. You're used to spending it. If you just take that same money and move it over, you're going to have more than enough money. In fact, you actually can fund a lot of your retirement as well. You know, so yep. Any thoughts on that?
When you find a dollar, we need a system and a plan to capture that dollar, whether it's I paid off a debt or paid off a car or I got a raise or a bonus or child goes from preschool to kindergarten, you know, back to kind of having the bare bones structure of the plan. If we got a plan in place and we know it and we understand it and we're kind of excited about it, then we start to kind of reprioritize things and that thinking. And the first thought is not, man, what could I do with $1,000 a month? Well, I could buy an $80,000 car. You know, or if, you know, the thinking has been rearranged and it's, well, I'm on this shoulder. I kind of tell them, you know, I just want to be that voice. That's really my job is to, I'm accountable to them in the end, you know, for whatever those goals are. And so I want to be that, you know, that little, somebody said this one time and this way. And I thought, man, that's great. We're kind of like the gym, the fitness coach, you know, it's kind of a love hate relationship with that guy, you know, but this is my body fat goal, or my, you know, I want to do this with CrossFit. I want to, whatever it is. And they're accountable. And so they're going to be in your face, and nobody said it would be easy, but you know, you're going to get a text if you sleep in that day, and he's going to be on you, and you might work you twice as hard the next day. So that's kind of my role, you know, is to help them, you know, be that fitness coach. But yeah, when you find a dollar, we got to have a system to capture and redirect that dollar. If it was something, especially, it was going to get spent, and we can save it and grow it in a tax preferred manner, now we're making leaps and bounds, you know, towards the goals.
Yeah, I love that analogy. In fact, one of Dr. Swin's favorite sayings is we always hate not working out.
No, I always say you're never going to, wait, now you got me all trapped.
You always regret not working out.
You always regret not doing it, but you'll never regret doing it.
Yeah. After you actually do it.
Yeah, just, I had a client that used to have in her email signature, I just, for some reason, I thought that's so cool. It said, just start, the rest is easy. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. And that's kind of back to what I keep saying with, I'm less concerned about the dollar amounts as I am creating, let's build the car. Doesn't have to be a Lamborghini right away, but let's build the car and let's create a plan and let's get things automated. Automation works. We have to kind of, now we can always change it and stuff, but I tell people, let's figure out what's the right number through you going through your budget and everything that's big enough, but not too big. And let's just start somewhere. And I'll promise you, you're going to feel it for a month or two, and then you're going to forget about it.
Yep.
You know, and that's where the magic happens.
Is there a certain age limit that kids can actually start as far as like investing like in the stock market or whatnot with their own accounts?
No, I mean, sooner the better, right? Back to compounding. And even if it's just throwing something like that at the S&P 500 fund and teaching them how that, you know, what is that even? And just kind of start somewhere. Less concerned with, you know, the stuff that we start to kind of chase our tail on as I am, just start sooner and show them how money compounds. And no, sooner is better.
Okay. Well, I know with kids, especially if we can actually just be that role model for them again, if they start seeing their money grow at a very young age and they start seeing that over a few years, and if they start out even with, you know, toddlers, and by 12 years old, when they really have a better understanding of money, if they see what they've actually grown, even though they really didn't realize that, I think it does a lot. So even if we didn't get that head start, you know, growing up and whatnot, and even if we're not in the best place financially as parents, if we can start with our kids, even just kind of getting them out the gate and doing whatever we can for ourselves, I think that would do make a huge difference in what the next generation looks like from a financial standpoint.
Yeah. And I think really teaching them that correlation of hard work equals pay, you know, to a lot of degree, whether that's grades you pay them for or the landscaping job you're talking about, you know, that you did, helping them see that correlation, because that's life. You know, they're going to learn that the hard way at 22 years old, and hopefully they're prepared. But, you know, hard work kind of drives all this stuff. If you're not doing that and you don't have a good job and stuff, it makes all this other stuff we're talking about that much harder, you know, because they, you know, that's the biggest problem. We could chase that rabbit. And that's one for another episode probably.
But yeah. Even hard work. I said, you know, what does hard work mean? Because if you ask my dad and you ask me,
that's right.
It's not about the number of hours, it's about the productivity ultimately too. And but anyway, anything you want to leave us with for this episode as far as the fundamentals of finance, kids, and all that great stuff?
I think just find somebody, ask your friends, maybe ask around, whether it's me or somebody else, find somebody that you feel like you feel really comfortable with and that you can trust and that's competent, and just start somewhere.
Sounds good. Well, Jeff, really quick, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your company? Give us the information so we can reach out to you.
Sure. Yeah, topflightwealthstrategies.com is our website. A lot of FAQs on there that you can check out. How are we compensated? Any advisor needs to be really transparent on how they're compensated. If, you know, if they get uncomfortable, if you ask them about fees or don't talk about it, then it's something that, you know, probably maybe you don't have the right guy. But check out the website, and I'm happy to help any way I can.
Sounds great, Jeff. Well, thanks for joining us again. Thank you for joining us today for the Parents of Advocate podcast. From surviving to thriving in your household, we will see you next week.